You're listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast network. Welcome to Dolphins Talk Weekly, your one-stop audio breakdown of all of this week's Miami Dolphins news. Now, here is your host, Kevin Durr.
Good morning, Dolphins, and welcome to episode 24 of Dolphins Talk Weekly. I am your host, Kevin Dern. Please give me a follow on Twitter at KevinMD4. You can follow the show on Spotify, iTunes, Spreaker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Excited to be back with you again this week. Got the recording out a little bit later than normal. Had the chance to go to my hometown Cincinnati Reds game on Saturday. And I told my wife before I left that I was either going to see a rainout or a loss. I've gone to probably 30 or 40 Reds games in the past 10 years, and I can only think of about four or five times they win, and at one point I had gone to like 13 losses in a row. And last night's game, they were ahead 2-0 behind a great outing from starter Luis Castillo, and then the bullpen came in the seventh inning and they blew the lead really quickly. Amir Garrett, I don't know that I've ever seen a pitcher just completely fall from grace as much as he has. You know, he's kind of a wannabe tough guy against the Pirates and the Cubs, and against anybody good, he has just really, really struggled this year. So they lost the lead. It was 3-2 going into the bottom of the seventh. And then out of nowhere, what had been a really nice, partially cloudy day, turned into an absolute monsoon. So I went with my dad, and we ended up, you know, running for cover because we were sitting out in the open. And, you know, the rain delay lasted a little bit, and we just decided to bail. And then they ended up losing an extra inning. So I guess I got to see both the loss and the rainout at the same time. Hopefully your weekend went better for you, and hopefully you guys are ready. You know, summer's coming. Are you ready to unveil your beach bod? You're in luck. Our friends at Manscaped just launched their fourth generation performance package, which includes Lawnmower 4.0. You heard that right, the 4.0. Compliment your summer bod with a trim from the leaders in male grooming. The sun is shining and calling your name, fellas. Join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped. And get ready for hot guy summer by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code DolphinsTalk at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code DolphinsTalk at manscaped.com. Escape the shrubs and weeds this summer and shine with Manscaped. And thank you to them for sponsoring the podcast. Just going to kind of go off the cuff today. I know we're nearing training camp. 2 weeks away now. It's coming up quick. And as I talked about on the last episode, just kind of wanted to go over a defensive preview in this week's article, or this week's podcast. I actually just finished an article, which is up on DolphinsTalk.com, which I titled A Guide to the 2021 Defense, or 2021 Defensive Guide. And that'll kind of take you through a look at all of the positions in depth, where they actually fit. I did sort of positional grouping depth charts for each of the different fronts that they use a lot of, not every front. There are some that I didn't put a depth chart in, but I found some screenshots from games last season and put the depth chart in my mind as I see it going into 2021, how each of those different personnel groupings and formations would fit, as well as an entire depth chart for the defense, and just kind of thought, you know, we'll throw out statistics and all that stuff for today. I've talked about that plenty. I've written about that plenty. And we'll just kind of go through, you know, some of the positions, what the actual roles are, and what guys I see playing each of those positions. And then we'll also do some, I almost wanted to call it senior superlatives, but it's not really that, but just kind of who I predict the most improved player will be this year, our most important newcomer, who's needed to step up, and this defense will be elite if ... So just kind of wanted to go through all of those things, and you can read more in depth about this on the article that's posted on DolphinsTalk.com. I also have it pinned to my Twitter account right now, which is at KevinMD4. And I know, I guess one of the biggest reasons I wanted to put this guide together, and I talked about this in the article as well, is that everyone kind of views this defense as a 3-4. And yes, they do play some 3-4. I think it's important to note, though, that there are 3-4 principles, you know, throughout this defense, even when they're playing with four-man defensive lines or playing a 4-3 package itself, which they will do. And I just kind of wanted to go through and look at these positions in those different roles one more time as kind of a primer for everybody before we get going into training camp. And I've also, in the article included a picture of Bear Bryant's defensive line technique alignments. I know a lot of people kind of get confused or have questions about that. That picture spells it out. And I also talked about, you know, what their philosophy is. I don't want to get into that kind of a discussion. We'll kind of go black and white points here today on this episode. But just know that no matter what front or what defensive formation they are using, there are principles of a 3-4 defense in it. Even though I suspect we'll likely see more four-man fronts this year. You know, they've added Jalen Phillips in the draft, Bernardrick McKinney can play middle linebacker, can play some outside linebacker. And I do feel like they're going to give Zach Sealer an opportunity to get on the field more, which could mean him playing more defensive end, which is something he did a lot last year down the stretch. So going into the positional guide, we kind of talked about this before in some other episodes, but I'll break down each position, just kind of give you a one or two sentence overview of what it is and who I think we're going to see playing there. After that, we'll run through the defensive depth chart, and then we'll get into the categorical portion of the show. So starting off with the defensive line, let's begin there. The rush end. Now, this is a player who's generally going to play in a 5, 6, 7, or 9 technique look, but can sometimes squeeze down to a 4 technique, which we saw Zach Sealer do a little bit last year, typically when an edge linebacker like Andrew Van Ginkel is in the game. Now, this guy's primarily the weak side or open side defender, and we're likely to see Emmanuel Ogba play this a lot this year. I think Jalen Phillips will get snaps here. He could also get some snaps at outside linebacker as well, which we'll talk about in a minute. But basically, this is your best rusher. And they tried to make this Shaq Lawson last year. It didn't really take off. Now I think they're going to be in a position where they can kind of mix and match the fronts with Ogba and with Phillips. Next, you have your one technique or nose tackle. This person's primarily playing as a shade technique or head up on the center. Sometimes in Miami's defense, this person will play a 2 technique. And last year, once Devon Godshall went down, this became Raekwon Davis's role. And I think he's very likely to keep it this year. Miami also went out and brought back John Jenkins, who was with the team in 2019. I think he will get used situationally. And, you know, if you've listened to the show before, I talk a lot about what Brian Flores did in 2018 with the Patriots. He had Malcolm Brown and Danny Shelton in this role. I think a good way to think of it is think of Malcolm Brown is now Raekwon Davis and Danny Shelton is now John Jenkins. You can plug and play those guys. And if you're facing a third or fourth and one against the Titans and Derrick Henry, maybe you have them both in the game for some extra beef up front. The next position would be the 3 technique, or what I sort of call the multi-tool position, because this position plays up and down, mostly as a 3 technique, and this was Christian Wilkins' spot last year. But he's played anywhere from a 0 to a 1 to a 2-eye, a 2, a 4-eye, and a 4. Even has played some 5 technique in this defense before. If you remember back in 2019, he played some defensive end against the Cowboys in that game. And I think Adam Butler will be the direct backup here for Christian Wilkins. I think Adam Butler is going to have a pretty key role in that odd Mac O personnel grouping that we talked about last week. So he'll probably play a lot on third down. I think this is Christian Wilkins' best spot. And I think we'll see Zach Sealer take a couple snaps here as well, like he did last year. Then on the front, you also have the big end, which primarily plays in a 5 or 6 technique. You can extend him out wide a little bit if you want. But in other formations, they are able to play this person in a 4, a 4-eye, or even a 3 technique. Now, Emmanuel Ogba and Zach Sealer both kind of played this role last year. It kind of depended on the formation of who was on the field. Sometimes it was both of them. If you look at their 3-3-5, the jack front that they played, both of those guys were on the field a lot. This year, I think they're going to try and get Zach Sealer more reps at this big end spot, especially in four-man fronts, because he and Andrew Van Ginkel, when they played on the right side, were a pretty formidable tandem that was really good down the stretch. And I thought Van Ginkel had one of his best games of the season against the Raiders. I almost said Oakland there, but caught myself. So we went with Raiders in week 16, playing a lot next to Zach Sealer. I think Jason Strobridge might get a few snaps here. He did last year, kind of later in the year. And Christian Wilkins may get some snaps at this spot as well. Moving to the linebacker unit. Now, I'm going to list kind of four different positions. They're not always all going to be on the field unless they're running a 3-4 type of package, which they do run, just not as often as people like to make out. So the first position is a strict edge linebacker, and this is basically the stand-up version of the rush end. You're mostly playing in a 5, a wide 5, or a 7 or 9 technique. There's pretty minimal coverage assignment, so it's basically someone who is setting the edge and against the run and then going after the quarterback. Last year, this was Andrew Van Ginkel. Now, I know there's been a lot of talk about Van Ginkel moving over and taking over Kyle Van Noy's role. I don't know that that's necessarily going to be the case now that they've brought in Benardrick McKinney and Brennan Scarlett. I think you can leave Van Ginkel here, and maybe if you're able to get by with having Zach Sealer take on more snaps at end, you can get both he and Van Ginkel on the field more in some of these situations. You know, Miami loved to play that 4-3 extend front, which basically looks like a 6-1 because you walk both your outside linebackers up to the line of scrimmage and you have one off-ball linebacker sort of protected behind the interior lineman that has, you know, really no gap responsibility and is just a free hitter. So I think if you can do that, Van Ginkel should play this role. I think you could see Brennan Scarlett getting some snaps here, possibly Vincent Beagle as well if he makes the roster. This is what Beagle played in 2019. I just don't know that I see him making it just based on some of the roster math at other positions. Next, you have sort of the inside linebacker slash weak side linebacker when you're in, you know, a 4-3 or that weak inside linebacker in a 3-4 look. This is one of the primary spots, and it's on the field most downs, and this is Jerome Baker's role to fill last year. Now, there might be certain situations or down and distance situations, to be more specific, where you take him off the field and your three linebackers, you know, or he goes off the field and you bring in McKinney to play inside or Landon Roberts to play inside to protect against the run just because they're bigger and better tacklers against the run. But this is a pretty flexible spot. You can use it as a tight end coverage specialist, which that's one of the key things is Miami will line up in what looks like a 3-4, but it's really a 3-3 jack front with a linebacker playing as a third safety. And they did this last year with Kamu Grugier-Hill early in the season. He struggled with it, especially against Arizona in that game. Jerome Baker kind of took over that role as the season wore on. So I think it's his position all the way around this year, and maybe we see some Duke Riley get sprinkled in. Then they have a true middle linebacker, which tends to play either as the Mo backer in a 3-4 or a Mike backer in a 4-3. This was a Landon Roberts role last year. You're basically, you know, defending the run B-gap to B-gap, or you're a free hitter in the jack front because there's no gap responsibility because you have a nose and both guards are covered by the two defensive ends in that front. So I think Benardrick McKinney is likely to get some snaps here in short yardage and goal line, but this was a Landon Roberts role last year. It's kind of a bit role. I would say really Jerome Baker's role and then the next role we'll talk about, which I think will go to McKinney, are the two primary roles, and then Van Ginkel's number 3, Roberts is number 4. So the next role you have is kind of a combination of an inside backer, outside linebacker slash Sam backer. And this is where Kyle Van Noy played last year. He can play off the ball or he can play on the line of scrimmage outside of an end. I think Benardrick McKinney is going to take on at least a chunk of this responsibility. I think there are certain packages like a 4-2-5 nickel front, which should be one of the most widely used packages by the Dolphins this year, where he's going to line up off the ball. But then I think you could see him in certain situations like a 4-3 under or a 4-3 extend, or in some of the 3-3-5 stuff where he becomes an on the line of scrimmage outside linebacker. There's some coverage responsibility, some pass rush responsibility, some blitzing in this role. McKinney did all of that pretty well at Houston. Really, the one area of his game where he's not super effective is in coverage. But we never really saw Kyle Van Noy have a bunch of, you know, hard, let's call it, coverage assignments last year. It was mostly taking a back in the flat or covering, you know, something in the short zone. Very rarely any man-to-man work down the field. So I think if that's the capacity in which they use Bernardrick McKinney, they're probably going to be just fine with it. Now, two other players I want to mention here. Miami also signed Brennan Scarlett from Houston. He tended to play more of a strict outside linebacker, edge linebacker role as a Sam for Houston. He's a bigger guy, bigger than McKinney is even. McKinney's 6'4", 257, Scarlett 6'4", 263, and he's a tremendous edge setter against the run. There's not a whole lot else he does well, but he can dent the edge, you know, better than any linebacker I would suspect Miami currently has, just based on what I've seen. So I think he may get a couple opportunities to sort of be a bit player as well, especially against run-heavy teams. You know, if you want to run that 4-3 extend, maybe you put Van Ginkel and Scarlett as the outside guys and bring McKinney into the middle. Perhaps that's something we see against a run-heavy team like Tennessee late in the season or against Baltimore in the Thursday night matchup. I also think there's one wild card player here, and that could be Jalen Phillips. Now, going back to his time at the U, Jalen Phillips played a lot of defensive end, primarily on the left side, which is where this role predominantly is. But Jalen Phillips also does a lot of things from a stand-up position, so it kind of makes it look like an outside linebacker role. Maybe that's something they train him to do. I think he's certainly athletic enough to do it, but I think his primary role, in an informal tone here, is that he's going to be a pass rusher. You want him helping get after the quarterback. I wouldn't want him to be in coverage a lot of the times. Think of it sort of like how they used Cam Wake. You were wasting Cam Wake if you tried to have him cover a tight end or something like that. You wanted him going after the quarterback, and I think that's what Jalen Phillips can do. Jalen Phillips also showed a nice propensity to be able to defend the run using, you know, backdooring blocks. I do wonder how much they will want him to learn to hold the point and play through defenders, which is something that Kyle Van Noy was pretty good at. I haven't watched enough Jalen Phillips film to really know if that's something he can do. He certainly seems to have the length and the size to be able to do it, and maybe that's something that they're able to teach him and work with him on in camp. But he's sort of the wild card in this whole system. How much do they actually let him play linebacker in a true sense where, you know, he's dropping into short zones or covering the flat or, you know, dropping into the hook curl zone? I don't think they're going to do it a whole lot because you're not maximizing his value. You want him rushing the passer and playing on the edge. But that's the wild card spot, and you could see some guys shift if they do find a full-time role for Phillips there. I would imagine it probably falls to McKinney for the most part, and then maybe you have Phillips and Scarlett kind of taking some of the other snaps that otherwise Kyle Van Noy would have had if he was still here in Miami. The secondary positions are a little bit more straightforward. You have the left and right corner, outside corner, perimeter corner, boundary corners, whatever you want to call them. That's Byron Jones and hopefully Xavien Howard. Hopefully the team is able to figure out this situation and you bring him back. If not, then I think there's going to be a lot put on Noah Igbinoghene's plate again. And do remember that last year, Xavien Howard really didn't have much of a training camp. He kind of came back the week before the season. And people forget, he was on a snap count in week one against the Patriots. He played the entire first half, and then they held him out of the entire second half altogether because they didn't want to overdo it because he had just come back from that knee issue. So maybe long-term, Noah Igbinoghene is the right fit for this role. I think the kid's ridiculously athletic. He seems to have, you know, some talent there. The mental game, I think, is where he's got to do a lot of catching up from year one to year two. You know, there were certainly some bad moments last year against Stephon Diggs. He had the lapse in coverage against Seattle where Russell Wilson threw the long pass right before halftime to set up a touchdown when otherwise it would have been a one-point game. You know, he had a couple bad beats against Jacksonville where he got bailed out because Gardner Minshew made bad throws. But then later in the season when he had to come in and replace X in the Cincinnati game when Xavier Howard got ejected, he did really well. So, you know, we saw some good and bad, more bad. But I think overall, if you make the projection on Noah, he's going to be pretty good. But I would say this is the key here is even if he does take a jump from year one to year two and he becomes a good starter, he is still not going to be as good as Xavier Howard was last year or was likely to be this year. So hopefully the team is able to remedy that situation and get Xavier Howard back into the fold. And then perhaps you can see Noah Igbinoghene play some snaps as the nickel or slot corner. You know, this has been Nick Needham's role the past 2 years, or I guess year and a half, really. I think it's apparent that Miami want competition here. They brought in Justin Coleman. Jason McCourty was signed, who has played this role in the past. They talked about Noah Igbinoghene getting reps in the slot. You want to put the best person in this position. I don't necessarily know that that's Nick Needham or Justin Coleman at this point. You know, you'd like one of the two of them to win it, or Noah Igbinoghene to win it if Xavier Howard comes back and is inserted as a starter. I think that gets your best three guys on the field if you do that. But that's going to be a spot that bears watching in camp with a lot of competition. Then you also have the big nickel or slot safety position. This was Patrick Chung in New England. I think it's going to be Brandon Jones here. It's basically an overhang defender who can also help play as a box linebacker and set the edge a little bit. Then we have the free safety middle of the field position. As you know, we've talked about this plenty. It's basically the deep center fielder. All indications point to Javon Holland being that guy for this year. And then strong safety has been more of a tight end coverage specialist role, which I guess is where Eric Rowe comes in. And then, you know, Brandon Jones did play some split safety last year in certain formations. So you're likely to see both of those guys here as well. Now, again, the projected depth chart that I have, I just kind of went through and did this based off of the positions we just talked about rather than listing it out as a 3-4 or 4-3. So the guys that I had that made the team are as follows, and I was able to find 25 players to be on the defensive roster here. And this is my depth chart using the big end. I think Zach Sealer is the starter and Jason Strowbridge is the backup. The one technique slash nose tackle, it's Raekwon Davis and John Jenkins. The three technique and the multi-defensive tackle spot, I think, is Christian Wilkins and Adam Butler. And then as rush ends, it's Emmanuel Ogba and Jalen Phillips. Though, like we talked about, Jalen Phillips could also see a lot of snaps at outside linebacker. At edge linebacker, I have Andrew Van Ginkle by himself. I think you can plug in Phillips and McKinney and Scarlett in that role if you want. The inside linebacker, Jerome Baker and Duke Riley. Middle linebacker is Elandon Roberts. And then that outside linebacker combo backer position is McKinney and Scarlett. As for the secondary, we have the outside corners, Byron Jones and Xavier Howard. I think you're likely to see Jason McCourty possibly take some snaps there. The slot guys, Nick Needham, Justin Coleman. I think Noah Igbinoghene could play at both of those corner spots, and I think he's likely to take over for X if something happens where X either holds out or is traded. You know, hopefully that's not the case, but I think Igbinoghene is the next in line there. So the outside corners, Jones, Howard, Igbinoghene, and then the slot guys, Needham and Coleman. I think at free safety, I went on a little bit of a limb here and kept three. Javon Holland and Jason McCourty, as well as Jamal Perry. Jamal Perry, as you remember, played some in the slot in 2019. And then last year, he was the backup to Bobby McCain, despite being listed as a corner. he was the guy that would come in for Bobby when he got hurt. We missed him dearly in the game against Kansas City because that's when Clayton Fedulum got to play and got roasted. At strong safety, I put Eric Rowe. The slot safety is Brandon Jones. And then the backup strong safety, I put, you know, Brandon Jones and Clayton Fedulum can both kind of be inserted there. Fedulum, I feel a little bit uneasy about just because he's getting paid big dollars to pretty much be a special teamer. You know, maybe someone like Trill Williams or Nate Hawley is able to take that roster spot. But for now, I'll put Clayton Fedulum there. He was pretty versatile, did some nice things with fake punts last year on special teams. You know, he had the big run against the Raiders, had another first down against the 49ers early in the season. And it's just a damn good special teamer. Now, as far as the sort of, we'll call them the senior superlatives or the categorical, you know, listings here, I just wanted to kind of go through, you know, three or four areas that I wanted to focus on for camp. In terms of the player that I think would be most improved from this year, from last year to this year, I'm going to go with Zach Sealer. And he was pretty damn good last year, earned an extension in the season. I think if he ends up getting snaps as a D-end in four-man fronts, like I think he will, I think he could really take his game to another level. I think it allows you to keep Christian Wilkins on the field more on first and second down and allows you to use Adam Butler as a role player in that Odd Mac O package on third downs. If you want to learn more about the Odd Mac O package, go read that article, my 2021 defensive guide on DolphinsTalk.com. I laid it out in there. Or go to YouTube and watch the Coach Vass videos on it. He offers a tremendous explanation with film clips for you to look at as well. But I think if Sealer is able to improve and get on the field more, he always seemed to be around the ball when it was a run. He always seemed to be involved on those third and fourth down, you know, in short run stops. You think back to the Arizona game. I think back to the Raiders game. He made the plays on some of those key short yardage situations and got Miami's offense the ball back or forced punts. And I think he takes his game to another level this year. The most important newcomer was a pretty interesting one. I had a tough time deciding on this. You know, I think Adam Butler kind of has his role sort of carved out for him already. I think Jalen Phillips can obviously add some things. You know, as a pass rusher, I think at bare minimum, he's going to have a role on third downs, potentially a lot more than that. Javon Holland, I think, is a very key aspect, and we talked about that on last week's episode. How does a rookie, you know, handle calling the defense, adjusting the coverages, making all the calls when they want to double guys? And you'll see more of that if you watch Coach Vass's video series on the Odd Mac O formation on YouTube. That's a lot to put on a rookie, but they do have an experienced veteran in Jason McCourty who's been in this defense that he can lean on, or maybe even McCourty starts the year off and then they insert Holland, you know, little by little until he is the starter. So I'm going to go with Bernardrick McKinney just because I think you can sort of formulate the defense based on his arrival. You can play more four-man fronts with him because you have a bigger presence at inside linebacker. He can play some outside linebacker for you. He's a great run-defending linebacker, is tremendous around the goal line, and I think Miami's red zone run defense and goal-to-go run defense last year was terrible. I think they gave up the most touchdowns on the ground. Be careful as you listen to that. Give up the most rushing touchdowns in like goal to go situations out of any team in the league, or if not, they were in the bottom three. It was very bad. McKinney should be able to help in that regard. I think he'll probably call most of the defense this year, and then you can use him in some of those same edge roles that Kyle Van Noy was in. So that's a key factor. The position I think that needs to step up the most, or player that needs to step up the most as of right now, would be whoever ends up the slot corner. Whether it's Nick Needham, whether it's Justin Coleman, whether it's Noah Igbinoghene, whoever that is, even Jason McCourty, whoever it is, needs to be better. You know, we saw Isaiah McKenzie take apart Nick Needham last year in the first half of that Bills game, and that basically put Miami behind the eight ball to the point where they weren't going to win that. You can't have that happen anymore, you know, especially with Buffalo and all of the weapons they have in the passing game. That needs to be better. The caveat here would be is if something happens to where Xavien Howard is holding out or he is traded, then this player who needs to step up becomes Noah Igbinoghene, because you've basically got to replace him in the lineup. You know, I don't think you want any of the other guys lining up out wide to do that. You want Noah Igbinoghene, a first-round pick, to be that guy. So I think this defense has the chance to be elite, and I would say elite means, you know, top five, top three in scoring defense. And I think for that to happen, you need a couple of things to occur. Number one, they've got to get better on first down. I think it was Mina Kimes posted this in a recent ESPN article and talked about it in her podcast. Miami's EPA on first downs was like 27th in the league, or efficiency per play or something like that. I forget what the metric is. But basically, they were one of the worst defenses in the league on first down. I think they were 7th or 8th on second down, and then they were by far and away the best team on third down. They had the best third down defense in the NFL by 3 whole percentage points ahead of Baltimore, which is incredible. So they've got to get better on first down, which likely means stopping the run better. So that's number one. Number two is they have to be able to generate turnovers, not even at the same clip, but close to it. You know, those things they're random. You know, you can practice taking the ball away. You can practice stripping it. You can practice with guys, you know, catching passes from the jugs machine that are on defense. You can focus on it, but sometimes the ball doesn't bounce the right way on a fumble. Sometimes it gets tipped and you may not catch it. It may bounce to a receiver. So there's a little bit of randomness involved to it. But if you can keep up that, you know, that clip and the streak of however many games, like 20 or 23 games it is with a turnover generated, if you can keep yourself in the top 10 in terms of turnovers generated, you're going to be pretty good. And I think key number three would be being able to generate more pass rush with 4 or 5 players. You know, you can't rely as heavily on the blitz in all situations, because Buffalo found a way to stop the cover zero blitz last year, late in the season. You can still blitz a lot and be very effective. You know, look at Rex Ryan's Jets defenses. Look at Miami's defense last year. Look at the Patriots in 2018, especially in the playoffs. You can blitz a lot, but there are certain situations, and I would say for Miami, those situations are when you play running quarterbacks like a Josh Allen or a Patrick Mahomes. You need to be able to generate more pressure with 4 or 5 guys and not have to bring 7 or 8, because that's just too fine a line to walk in certain situations. So I think that is a lot of the impetus behind the Jalen Phillips pick. I think it's a lot of the impetus behind signing Adam Butler, who is more of a pass rush defensive tackle than anything else. You're looking to be able to get pressure with 5 and you know, 5 guys. Maybe you bring 6 in some situations, but you want to be able to get pressure with 4 and 5 on third downs. I think that's going to be a key. And then the final key is you've got to figure out this Xavien Howard situation. You know, he is the best player on the roster. You get rid of him, that's going to come back to bite you. You know, I don't care how good Noah Igbinoghene is this year, which he could be very good if he's called upon. It's not going to be as good as Xavien Howard was last year. Probably not even in the same neighborhood. It's going to cost you a game or two if you can't get it fixed. And I think at some point, you have to be able to hang on to some of these elite players. Laremy Tunsil, Minka Fitzpatrick, Xavien Howard. Do you really want to have drafted all 3 of these guys and traded them all away? You know, I don't think you're doing something right if you have to trade an elite player every single time. And I don't think you're going to get the value for Xavien Howard that you got for Laremy Tunsil. There's too many other factors involved. So you have to be able to figure out a solution, in my opinion, to get Xavier Howard back. We talked about it on last week's episode. You want to maximize the winning window while you can, especially when you have Tua, who at this point, you know, he's not going to be capable of strapping a team to his back week in and week out. He might do it a couple times, like the Arizona game last year, the Chiefs game in the second half last year, but he's not capable of doing it all the time, week in and week out, yet. He could get there, but I don't think it's going to be this year. So in my estimation, you need to have the best team possible around Tua and on the other side of the ball from Tua in order to maximize your chances of winning. And Xavier Howard helps keep that rest of the roster up near the top of the league. And if Tua can make a pretty big jump, I think this is a team that can make some noise in the playoffs. They should be in the playoffs. And I think it would be a pretty big disappointment if they don't make it. Now, if they don't, we'll have to look at the circumstances as to why. But there's no reason this team shouldn't win 11 or 12 games. There's not. If Tua is the real deal, that's where they should be at. And if you keep Xavier Howard there, you know, that's only going to maximize your chances of getting to where we want to go. So that's my defensive preview for this week. I know it was a lot of me talking and not a lot of numbers or data and things like that, like you're used to with the show. I promise I'll have more of that for next weekend's episode when we cover the offensive preview for the start of training camp. Again, please give me a follow, KevinMD4 on Twitter. Follow the podcast on Spotify, Spreaker, iTunes, and check out my article, The 2021 Defensive Guide, which is up now on DolphinsTalk.com. Thank you, guys. Enjoy your week. We're almost to training camp. Fins up.